Hello, I just wanted to do a follow-up podcast after the incredible Power and Conflict rap that was performed by myself and Mr. Shirley, to go through each of the lines and explain really why they're relevant. So the first one was, "Wilt please you sit and look at her?" And that's from My Last Duchess. Now, instantly, we've got the you, so "Wilt please you sit and look at her?" Which straight away lets you know that this is going to be a dramatic monologue. Now, it seems like it's a polite question, but it's not really a question, it's a demand, and it reflects the tight control of the speaker. It's in iambic pentameter, if you want to think about structure, which again reflects the rhythm and the control of the Duke of Ferrara. Okay, as we know, he's an extremely powerful man who has potentially had his last wife murdered because of her flirtations. So it's an important line because it, as I said, it shows his control, and he's directing the envoy to look at her being the main subject of his conversation, which is his last duchess. So the second one, Atuna, the Dark Prince Muscular, is from Kamikaze. And obviously this poem is about a kamikaze pilot. And what we've got here is the tuna fish, which actually is what the most powerful image in the poem. And it's natural imagery, and we've got that sort of next to the metaphor of dark prince and muscular, which is quite threatening. And it's to really to make you stop and think about the fact that the true power really belongs to nature, which is one of the main ideas, you know, that runs through that poem. So number three was from Poppies, and it's "Sellotape bandaged around my hands." Now we know that this poem is about a mother who's reflecting on her lost son at war. And we've got that war military language there straight away with bandage, even though she's talking about something really quite normal, which is just where she's got sellotape wrapped around her hands to sort of pat off the cat hairs. And it's got the conflict there of the mother experiencing, you know, everyday life, but with this huge wound from war. So we've got bandaged again, implying suffering, implying a wound. The fourth one is from Remains, "Sun stunned, sand smothered land." Can't say that very fast, which is obviously sibilance. We've got that repetition of the S sound, which makes it very sinister. We've got sort of compound adjectives where we've got the juxtaposition of sun and sand, which are very quite positive. And then we've got stunned and smothered, which is very, very sinister. And I think that kind of mirrors the way that this character is coping as well, but where he's got, you know, everyday normal things just absolutely tainted. There's nothing left for him now that hasn't been ruined. It makes you, with the sibilance, because you can't say it quickly, it causes you to stop and think, and obviously that's the point of this poem, is thinking about those that are left behind. The fifth one, the flung spray, and there's dot 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 there actually, even though we say spit and then spits like a tame cat, because there is a bit more talking in between that. So the flung spray dot 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 and spits like a tame cat. That's from Storm on the Island, sorry. And again, we've got a poem that really demonstrates the power of nature. And so here, where we've got this spits like a tamed cat, obviously that's a simile. We've got our comparison using like or as. Spitting is very violent. But then the tamed cat is unexpected. You don't expect a tamed cat to behave like that. So it's about the unexpected attack in this sense of this particular storm. In exposure, that's our sixth quote. So war lasts, rain soak and clouds sag. We've got obviously Exposure is a poem about the brutal situation of the weather. And in this instance, we've got Pathetic Fallacy. It's where the weather reflects the mood or the ideas. And again, it's reflecting the awful situation that these soldiers are in. The weather here is seen as very sinister, and it like it's having a deliberate attack on the soldiers. Number seven is from the prelude, Stealing the Boat. And it's a huge peak, black and huge. We've got here the repetition of huge and huge. And when you've got something like that, you would normally think, well, wait a second, why can't a poet come up with a better word? Why has he repeated himself? And that's really to reflect the speaker of this poem and the way in which he has almost been stunned out of a list of his list of vocabulary. He regresses into a very simplistic sort of definition of what he can see before him. He's lost, you know, prior to this, he's very figurative and elegant in the way that he describes things. And now he's almost like stuttering because he's so in awe of things that he's seen there. It's like vocabulary has deserted the speaker. So number eight, Dem, Tell Me About Lord Nelson and Waterloo, is we've got the phonetic spelling there of Dem and Bout, and this is from Checking Out My History, if you didn't already know that. This really here in this line, Dem, Tell Me About Lord Nelson and Waterloo, is we've got his real identity with the Dem, Tell Me, which is, you know, which brings forward a sort of dialect, an accent. And then Lord Nelson and Waterloo is the symbol of British education there. And his conflict of the real identity plus his forced identity is really what he's talking about and when he kind of slams the fact that he's forced to learn about things that really he has nothing to do with his history. His history, as he goes on to discuss later, is people like Mary C. Cole and etc. We've got this duality there of what he wants and what's being imposed upon him. Number nine then is from the Emigre, and it's I comb its hair and love its shiny eyes. And this is sort of romantic. It's about the whole poem is about the power of a place. And we've got personification throughout. And this suggests sort of like a relationship. It's very very romantic almost. Combing someone's hair is very seen, you know, you must be very close, very affectionate, and obviously loving their eyes. Number 10 is from Ozymandias. Half-sunk, shattered visage lies. It's very negative there, obviously, sunk and shattered, very powerful. The poem itself is an attack on the idea that power is eternal. Everything is affected by time and, you know, ironically, this character, Ozymandias, seems to think that he is invincible and where late he talks about being king of kings and how he was obviously a very cruel ruler, someone who sort of demanded power and respect even though he didn't necessarily earn it. We've got the shattered visage lies. Now it's about this sort of broken face. That's what it actually means, that there's a broken face sort of lying in the sand. But also we've got lies, perhaps could be a double entendre of how he ruled. You know, maybe he used to spout lots of lies and he wasn't very truthful, which builds in with the picture that we sort of have of a not necessarily worthy ruler. In Bayonet Charge, we've got our 11th quote. So his terrors touchy dynamite. I just realised how absolutely dreadful that rap was. But anyway, so from Bayonet Charge, and it's talking about how he is like a killing machine. He's a metaphor for danger. So this idea of dynamite can kind of explode and kill so many people instantly reflects the brutality that the soldier is feeling about his position. Number 12, so Might Fly Over Our Lives Like Paper Kites. It's my impression of Mr. Shirley there. It's a metaphor, an extended metaphor from tissue. So tissue is about how human life is fragile as a tissue. It's about human power and actually, more appropriately, the lack of human power that we actually have. Before this line, it's about receipts might fly over our lives like paper kites, which shows how money is dominates us. And actually, we should really question the power that they have. So the idea, you know, that paper kites and we're all sort of oohing and aahing at kites in the sky, following them. Actually, that's just ridiculous. We shouldn't be doing that. We as I said, we should question how warped our, you know, perception of money is. Number 13, well, then we go to London, one of my favourites, and we've got the mind forged manacles I hear. We've had this line actually follows on from the in every cry, in every blah blah blah. So we've had that repetition of in every, and now we find out what it is that the speaker is hearing in all of these cries of the men and the children, babies, whatever. And it's so the idea of mind forged manacles are handcuffs, and they have been sort of imposed by external authority. So the external authorities have imposed these ideas on our minds. Actually, it's a nice person to talk about here is the philosopher Rousseau, who famously quoted, "Man is born free, but everywhere he is in chains." So a little one for you there, Mr. Neil. Manacles are the kind of things, so as I said, they're handcuffs, and they're the sort of thing that you would see on criminals. So it's shocking. It's the audience don't want to think of themselves as though they are trapped in this way. Number 14 is from War Photographer. Tears between the bath and the pre-lunch beers. And we've got internal rhyme there. And it talks about how quickly people forget about the horrors of war. And obviously our war photographer, he can't. He's in these two places, you know, when he's developing his photos, but also his memories of taking them are very, very real to him, very present still. And here, this is kind of a real jibe at our society. And yes, we might find things upsetting when we sit and watch things on the news, but they're very quickly forgotten. And we've got the normality of a bath and pre-lunch beers, and they're things that seem important in our lives. And actually, these terrors that the war photographer is just absolutely plagued by. He can't forget. He can't forget as easily as society seems to. Then the last quote from our final poem, Charge of the Light Brigade, is someone had blundered, and then there is actually, they're not next to each other in the actual poem, but then rode the 600. We've got like a leadership error there. So blundered reflects that. It's about the mistake which caused this suicide mission to take place. The whole poem is very much, very rhythmic. And that's to mimic horses galloping forward. So that would be sort of a structural technique there because of the rhythm and the rhyme. And actually, this sort of ends, and it shows how the lives of all of these men will be cut short. And obviously, that's the tale that the poem is telling us. It's about how, you know, when we listen to authority, sort of, it doesn't always lead us to the best of ends, and how sort of one person's mistake can, without, if someone goes, you know, goes unchecked, it can have really catastrophic consequences. Quite a relevant idea, really, when we think of the position of power in our current climate, and, you know, one man going unchecked and what could happen. But anyway, that was the last of our poems. So that's a line from each poem in the anthology. Hopefully, if you can memorise the song, as captivating as it is, that will help you, and you will now have something to say about every single one of these. Anyway, good luck.